I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Jean Tang. Jean is the founder of Market Smiths. She's a writer, a speaker, and so much more. Jean has been seen at TEDx, South by Southwest, Small Business Summits, and many other venues. She's written for the New York Times, New York Magazine, Travel and Leisure, and also many Fortune 100 corporations. What's interesting about Jean is that in addition to what she's doing now with Market Smiths, she's also a piano prodigy and a pre-college graduate of the Juilliard School. Jean earned her undergraduate degree in business from Cornell University, which I think is how we first got connected, through some alumni stuff. And then Jean went to the University of San Diego School of Law and spent a brief stint as a lawyer. So she really has an eclectic and interesting background, which we're going to talk about. Jean, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thanks so much. It's great to be on it.
So I wonder if we could start off by just talking about, kind of starting off with what you're doing now, and if you could explain what you consider to be copywriting for humans.
Sure. That is our company slogan. And, you know, David, I can't tell you the exact moment that I came up with it because I don't remember, but I know that it was around the time that SEO, you know, search engine optimization was going through sort of this, like, let's write copy for websites and let's make sure we stuff it with keywords. And, you know, you read it and you were like, oh, goodness, this is like a lot of spam. And I probably had a moment when I thought to myself, gosh, that's not really very human. It doesn't seem like they're really, you know, they're talking to machines or talking to algorithms. They're not necessarily talking to people. So, you know, it was around that time, came up with the idea. I thought it made a lot of sense because, as well, I was at the time really just, you know, had been copywriting for 3 years. And I was writing for Fortune 100 companies and small businesses and a lot of B2B companies. And the tendency is to think, well, it's not going to sound very professional for a business audience if we don't sound stiff and if we don't kind of like use the jargon, you know. And, you know, if we make it too kind of like accessible and approachable and salesy. And, you know, I'm not one for super salesy copy, but, you know, it occurred to me that it, you know, could be done much, much, much better. And through my journalism career and through what I learned as a lawyer about building logical cases, you know, I thought there's a way to sort of combine the storytelling and combine the logic and make it super approachable, very accessible, you know, and completely professional at the same time. So I just want to tell you a little side story that when I was getting that slogan trademarked, the trademark office actually had an issue with copywriting for humans. They said, well, it's descriptive because it's because, you know, you're describing your services as being for humans. And you just thought it was kind of funny. We ultimately got it. But, you know, we were sort of laughing about the fact that, you know, it is actually more than descriptive. It's, you know, it's sort of saying that everybody who reads this is a flesh and blood human being and they're going to be acting on it.
And having gone through the trademarking process, I can totally relate. You never know how they're going to react to what you think is a particular kind of logic, and they have their own kind of logic.
Yeah, exactly. Luckily, ours prevailed.
Good. So, so Jean, I wonder if you could just give one example of how you turned something that might have sounded like jargon into something that is much more palatable to humans.
Sure. So let's see. There are lots of examples. Let me, you know, this may be, I'm going to approach it from a little bit of a general standpoint. So I'll say that a lot of times when you go to a website, go to any website, if it's a services business, let's just take that for example, they offer certain things that they do. The website will, by and large, say something like, you know, we are a this and this type of company, and we offer X, Y, and Z services, and our services are done as follows, right? So to my mind, you know, it's fine. It's articulate. You know, it says something. It gives information. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't leave the reader awfully confused. But it's not terribly engaging for several reasons. I mean, first of all, because it doesn't show the effort has been made to get into the reader's skin to see what the reader might be like dealing with, you know, either from the standpoint of a pain point or from like life would be better if, you know, something existed that, you know, is along the lines of what the business offers. So how we do it is we flip it and we make it, you know, completely second person. So, you know, the first word is oftentimes a you. You're dealing with this, you're dealing with this, or, you know, this is a situation, or imagine the world if, you know, this sort of thing. And I'm giving you very, very sort of generic phrasing around it. It's very specific. It's a very careful process where we make it very, you know, very specific to the business, and it doesn't sound at all cheesy. And then, you know, then we gradually work our way into, you know, what the business does. And at that point, what we're doing is we're painting a picture, we're building context, we're giving the contextual first, so that when they get to the part where it's about like, here's what we provide, it's very obvious that it's providing a solution that's needed in the world and makes people's lives easier and more profitable.
Interesting. Do you ever do you ever get into feel like you're getting into a situation where the particularly when you're trying to create the description from the perspective of the reader or the viewer, right, where you're using second person, which I think so many websites and other kinds of marketing material lack. If it's written from the perspective of the viewer, do you ever feel like you're in a position where you're painting a picture or suggesting a solution that might rub people the wrong way?
It's our job not to. And, you know, and here, let me, you know, to sort of clarify the answer, you know, it's absolutely our job to figure out who is the qualified target audience for this business. You know, who are the people who are buying this service or this product? Or donating money to a nonprofit, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You know, there it's often not just one group, one persona of people. It's often, you know, multiple personas. So you've got like, oh, we've got a group of donors and we've got a group of also customers. And we have a third group of like board members or, you know, just taking nonprofits as an example. You know, in other realms, it could be like, oh, we have the partner that actually is our referral source that refers to this kind of customer. And then we have three different types of customers that we market to, right? So we learn about all of those. And we relatively sort of like weigh them in terms of what's the most important, and then, you know, all the things that marketers do to kind of get inside the head of the buyer. You know, it's our job not to offend anyone. And, you know, a writer who's had enough experience and has enough of a toolkit at their disposal and has enough creativity, frankly, is able to kind of try different approaches to see what might be inconsistent, what might turn certain people off, what might be inclusive, but without being super generic and super universal to sort of like include the world and then you're talking to nobody at all, right? So we want to be vivid at the same time. So it's our job to kind of figure that out. It's also our job to figure out who is not the right client, who's, you know, I can't tell you how many clients we've had where they're like, you know, really, we get a lot of this type of client, but we don't want them. You know, we're moving to a different area, we're transitioning our business, or they're just too small for us, or maybe they're too big for us, you know, whatever. So it's our job to kind of figure that out and actively not offend anyone, but also kind of qualify that client out, that reader out. So they're not going to be, you know, they're recognizing themselves as not the target market and they don't respond.
So you're being really clear about your niche and the message.
Yes, yes.
That's great.
And I feel as if I'm describing it in a cheesy way, but I can't emphasize enough how high level of a process it is in terms of like doing it so that it does not sound cheesy. It's, you know, it's completely strategic and geared towards that person, but it's you know, they wouldn't necessarily know it. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Well, it sounds like you're trying to have a conversation with who the ideal member of the audience is.
Yeah, that could be one way of looking at it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Jean, I wonder, actually, if we could shift and talk a little bit about you.
Sure.
You and I have known each other for a number of years, and I've always been so impressed that you have what seems to me to be an eclectic background where you've done really well in so many varied areas and how you've combined that into your current business. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about like what your own path has been and maybe what some of the challenges have been, what, you know, some plateaus you may have hit, and how you have gone beyond the plateaus and smashed through them.
I am laughing because once upon a time I might have contextualized my own achievements as having been failures in a sense, which is sort of funny, isn't it? Because I've completely recontextualized it. So I really appreciate your saying that.
Yeah, it doesn't. To me, it doesn't look like they don't look like failures at all. They look like, wow, she's been piano prodigy. She went to law school, journalism background, Ivy League school.
Well, I'm not speaking for my parents. I mean, they're very proud of what I'm doing now. But I know for a little while their heads might have been spinning about, you know, where are you going to land? Like, what's your actual career? And, you know, that's, you know, people like things in boxes sometimes. And
parents want us to be safe.
Sure, exactly. So your question is
about your trajectory and some of the plateaus you may have hit along the way and how you've smashed through them.
Ah, that's such a
great
question.
That's the theme of the show, after all.
Yes. Okay. So actually, this ties into what I just said. So, so if you think about Juilliard, you know, which I attended, by the way, as a pre-college student between the ages of 10 and 18, you know, I think about the law career, which started out with graduating cum laude from law school, really having a great time in law school, then getting into the practice of law and sort of figuring like this is not for me. I think I'm naturally very predisposed, and you know, giving my parents their adequate credit because I do think I was it was raised in a very way to make me very driven. I think I'm naturally disposed to trying to achieve goals. And the goals, you know, I set very high for myself from being a kid, and you know, I said I'm going to get into Juilliard, and I did, and I, you know, I thrived when I was there. When I left, I gave up piano almost immediately, and didn't want to touch a piano for about 3 or 4 years. So you know, what's interesting that we're talking about plateaus is because I think that when looking back, I feel like the achievement came very naturally, but it didn't come to the rate of, like, you know, smashing through a plateau. Like I'd achieve something I set out for myself, and then I'd hit a plateau. I'd be like, okay, this is fine. And then I'd sort of like move on to the next thing, right? So in a way, you know, what's interesting is I'm at a point now with my business, not to skip over all that, but you know, I see this theme where, you know, there's an opportunity for growth, and it's tremendous, where there's an opportunity to be like, oh, maybe this isn't for me, you know, after all, which I don't really see myself doing because I do feel like what I do is a calling. So to be very honest, I feel like, you know, the actual growth period is exciting in and of itself. It's like, here's a goal I set for myself. It's so exciting to see myself achieving it. I know how to work hard to do it, and I'm completely motivated in the process. And I, you know, in the example of like piano, I practice, and I, you know, I get into Juilliard, I audition for it, I get in, you know, I have this tough teacher, and, you know, playing to her standards throughout the years, performing, giving a certain number of performances, entering competitions, you know, maybe not winning, maybe coming in the finals, you know, aiming that I'd play with an orchestra one day, you know, and that drove me. And then I sort of reached a plateau and I was like, all right, I'm done, you know. So I don't know if that sort of answers your question.
What goes through your head when you're kind of in the thick of it? I know you and I had a discussion before we started recording about what it's like to be in the thick of it. And we sort of just started to touch on it. I said, let's hold the discussion till we start the interview.
Yeah. No, it's great. You know, being in the thick of it, if that means like sort of hitting one of these plateaus that I then decide I don't want to smash, so to speak, I mean, it feels like losing sight of the actual value of what you set out to do. And, you know, when I look back at my past, I don't mind so much. You know, I got into the Ivy League school. I you know, played the piano. I did the, you know, journalism. You know, I did the law. You know, so like it didn't matter as much. But the stakes are very, very high with what I do now. And I'm very connected with the value of what we do. We're day by day, you know, me and our 13 writers are making lives better for the various business owners and, you know, business executives that we help. We're attracting business to them. We're making them money. And, you know, if I set a goal for myself and like the goal became sort of denuded of some of the values that the deeper values that I just talked about, it's very easy to sort of lose sight of, you know, what is it I'm here for? You know, oh, I'm trying to reach this goal. Like maybe it's a money goal and it comes in a vacuum and I'm like, oh, I just want to throw in the towel because it's hard. I mean, it's hard to reach goals, right? It's hard because you, by nature, by definition, you're challenging yourself. So, you know,
and it's very hard to be an entrepreneur too.
Yeah. I had a bad day the other day, right? And I think I sort of I mentioned this to you right before we started the podcast, but you know, I was ready to throw in the towel. I haven't told my employees this, so they'll be hearing this for the first time. And I was like, oh, this is a horrible day. What am I in this for? Like, why is, you know, we have this long days and we have these like clients who may be less than appreciative, you know, and we're, you know, battling, we're fighting a battle. You know, the name of my TEDx talk was Declaring War on the Bland. And sometimes it really feels like a war because it's like, oh, we're on the battlefront again. We have this client. They do appreciate what they do, you know, we do for them. But, you know, they might be sort of fighting us and trying to bland out the language and, you know, like that sort of thing. So, yeah, if I were just to kind of have my eye on a goal without, you know, being connected to what I'm here for, that could very easily get overwhelming. And, you know, I probably wouldn't last very long.
So when that those kinds of thoughts go through your head and you start to feel like, oh, things are starting to pile up here and they're not looking so good, how do you pull yourself out of it?
Yeah. So I think back, I mean, literally the day after Labor Day that this happened, and it doesn't happen very often. It was probably about once, twice a year maybe. I said, wow. This is a bad day. I should stop, you know, let me go do something else, you know. It's always nice to do something that that grounds you. And so for me, you know, things like yoga, I got this lovely yoga studio called Modo in the West Village. Or, you know, maybe just take a walk around the block, go have a nice meal, you know, go out with my boyfriend. Like some of these things might be advisable. So I think what I ended up doing was like watching like an episode of The Good Wife or something. And then and then you just, you know it's going to be different the next day, and you know that also you're quite in control of all of this, right? So like, you know, it just takes resetting your mindset. You know, on the day in question, I threw in the towel that day. I said, you know, I'm done for the day. Tomorrow will be different. And on Wednesday morning, sure enough, I woke up. You know, it was great, got so much done, you know, was in the best mood and was very, had a new perspective on things and was very, very grateful to, you know, to everyone. So, yeah.
I'm sure it's a great trait to be able to tell yourself that, you know what, it's enough for today. It's time to take a break and do something totally different.
Yeah. And it helps to know yourself as well. And, you know, I know myself well enough to know that, you know, I mean, I'm sure this applies to so many people, but, you know, when you are having a bad day, it just takes shifting the mindset, walking away from it. You know, the next day won't be the same at all. And if it is, then you can do something about it, you know. So, yeah, that's what it took.
That's great. So thank you for sharing that. Gina, yep. I wondered if we could talk a little bit about some of the influencers that have been really helpful to you as you have moved forward in your career.
Sure. So, yeah, so I've actually, you know, I mean, a must read for any person starting a business is The E-Myth, of course. And I remember reading it very, very early on before I could safely say it was actually a business, when it was just me freelancing and you know, selling my own work. And I remember thinking, you know, thinking it was really incredible, that they were talking about, essentially once you start a business, you are cleft into three roles. You're the technician, the person who actually does the work involved, the underlying work. You're the manager. You're the person who's like creating and managing processes to get the work done. And you're the entrepreneur, the dreamer, the visionary, the person who's like holding the path forward. And I remember taking note and saying, oh, great, I'm not going to fall into this trap. It's all wonderful. And then getting to the part of the book where it was actually talking about creating org charts. And, you know, I think it's somewhere in the last third of the book, right? He's like, okay, you got to create an org chart. And, you know, even if like a lot of the roles are the same, you know, you got to know this is sort of like the way that you're going to be able to hold the entrepreneurial vision and grow. And I remember kind of laughing and saying, you know, this is ridiculous. I don't need an org chart. I don't have a director of sales. I am that person. I'm every other person on this list. And so, you know, I don't think this applies to me. So it's funny that
surprise
happened. Surprise. So yeah, it's been a battle. I mean, we've grown despite, you know, my disdain for Michael Gerber's words. I'm actually now rereading the book, and it's been incredible, and I'm revisiting some of the insights and definitely, you know, rereading things anew with new eyes given all the experience I've had in the ensuing years. And most definitely will be creating an org chart when I'm done. So
good.
Yeah, so that's been one of my influencers for sure. Also, I've been very lucky. I mean, I've had incredible mentors, formal and informal. There's a program called EO Accelerator, which I'm sure you're familiar with, and I was fortunate to be in it. I was in it for a couple of years. Then I decided to sort of want to take things into my own hands. My original mentor in that program is this lawyer called Corey Kupfer, who's an incredible person and was an incredibly giving mentor. And I know, you know, one of the things he did, for example, was that he said, you know, I, again, sort of not believing that I could make things systematized and sort of like follow the lessons of my elders. You know, I remember protesting that proposals for us, you know, given the customization of what we did for a living, could never be templated. And I actually said that to him in one of our group sessions, and he said, that's ridiculous. Everything can be templated. And I kind of took his advice, and I went home and I sort of thought about it, and I said, all right, you know, I think this can actually be done. And I sort of tried ways of doing it. And then that really, like, you know, completely reinvented our whole sales process. So that was really incredible. Yeah, I've been lucky.
That's great. So Jean, I wonder if we could go back to,
yeah,
to Market Smiths and
yeah,
talk a little bit about what you're working on now and what we might have to look forward to in the near future.
Oh, great. Great question. Yeah. I do find that, growth has been there. We've been growing at a double digit rate since the beginning, which I hope to turn into a triple digit rate soon. You know, it's very easy for me to identify what the current struggles are. You know, we are doing a brisk business in selling a lot of website copy, which is project-based work, right? Finite, you know, it's the set, you know, set scope. It comes and goes, and once you're done, you're sort of done. We've done, you know, the same with various other materials we write, email campaigns, blog posts that are sort of like a one-off project, white papers, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on. What I have not, and I say I because I'm the salesperson, but you know, what I have not done as good of a job in is to sell anything recurring. Maybe 3% of our work is recurring, and obviously that's the gold ring on the, was it the merry-go-round,
mm-hmm,
brass ring. I've been very slow and late in learning that. I've really spent these last 5 years kind of patting myself on the back, like all the time, where I'm like, sold, you know, another project, another business owner is going to walk away with, you know, great copy, which is great. Not to downplay any of that. But I've really been focused on that, like selling things project by project, as opposed to, selling them in terms of a subscription model. So the biggest challenge right now, and what I'm turning my attention to, is to sell to enterprise level business. And we already have a few clients in that area, prominent clients. But to make that like a focal point, to make that something more like 20-30% of our business, as opposed to by number, something like 5%. By revenue, it's actually much, much higher. So to kind of do some outreach around that, and that word scares me, I got to say, because I haven't actually ever done outreach, ever. I've done a lot of networking, which is easy and fun. And we've done a lot of blogging and other things that sort of get the word out through organic Google search, which is really fortunate. But I've never called anyone before and said, "Hey, have you considered buying something from me?" And I'm terrified. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is to turn this project model, which has been really good and really steady and really wonderful, into a recurring model, or at least, you know, balance out the proportions. So that's what I'm dealing with from a business standpoint.
That's great. Jean, who do you know personally who is doing remarkable work?
Oh, yeah. I love that question. I was actually thinking about that question before we got on the line, and I'm going to say Aaron Sorkin, and he's not in my business. I mean, he's a writer, right? Mm-hmm. He's not writing copy for sure, but I mean, I am such an admirer. Of course, the Steve Jobs movie is coming out soon. So, obviously the jury's out, but, I really admire what he's done in his career. And, you know, I was a late fan of West Wing, because I saw it on Netflix, and Netflix, I think, released it last year. And I've since seen, the other shows and gone back and seen some movies over again. And I just think, yeah, I love what he does, and I love his writing, you know?
And he is somebody who I'm sure annoys a lot of people.
Yeah, I know.
And he's been very successful.
He's been successful. I mean, the dialogue that he writes and the plots and the characters are just so, I feel they're so intelligent.
And compelling.
And the way he must do research. I mean, he tends to hit on themes of like media and politics and Silicon Valley, right? But you know, he seems to be in it. It seems like it's coming from the standpoint of somebody who just knows that, you know, knows all the issues and isn't sort of you've still got to educate a public who may not know as much as you do, of viewers, you know. But I mean, he does it in a very intelligent way, sort of like letting you in, but also like not letting go or not dumbing it down. And I think that's a hard balance to reach.
It's a great example. Jean, how can listeners learn more about you?
Oh, sure. They can come to our website, which is www.marketsmiths.com with an S at the end. If they wanted to reach out to me, they could contact me. It's jean@marketsmiths.com.
Great. Well, thank you, Jean, for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a really interesting discussion about the ins and outs of our careers, ins and outs of running a business, and also the fascinating work that you do with Marketsmiths. My guest today has been Jean Tang, who is the founder and CEO of Marketsmiths. Thank you again, Jean, for joining us.
Thank you so much, David.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.